Teaching English Today, The Four Seas and Beyond by Louise Carlton-Gertsch is powered by Ernst Klett Sprachen, der Verlag für modernes Fremdsprachenlernen in Schule, Ausbildung, Universität und Erwachsenenbildung. Sprachenlernen fürs Leben.
Hello and welcome to Teaching English Today, The Four Seas and Beyond, a podcast in which we'll be looking at ways to help students of English develop important skills for the 21st century. I'm your host, Louise Carlton-Gertsch. I recently gave a talk to a group of sixth formers about the individual, society and technology. We explored the topic of identity formation and discussed how social media affects this. It was fascinating listening to the students share and discuss their opinions in a very differentiated manner. As I said to them, they gave me hope for the future. But what also emerged was how complex these issues are, that the way they're often presented is too black and white, and that we don't listen enough to what young people themselves have to say. Over the past decades, social media platforms have fundamentally changed how we see the world and ourselves. They've transformed the way we access information, and also how and with whom we share our personal experiences. Professor Qi Wang at Cornell University says the latter has contributed to a sense of selfhood that's unprecedented in modern times. She explains that we have three selves in the age of social media. The represented self, who we think we are. The registered self, how we present ourselves online. And the inferred self, what other social media users think of us. The represented self is how we privately see ourselves. It materializes in a very basic form when, as babies, we begin to recognize ourselves in a mirror and continues to develop as we explore the world around us. Over time, we get a sense of who we are, our likes and dislikes, our personal characteristics, values and beliefs. This self becomes increasingly nuanced and thus also changes how we behave and perceive the world around us. Through our online activities, we develop a digital extension of self, or what Wang refers to as the registered self. This is the filtered version of ourselves that we present to others on social media platforms. Whenever we post, repost, or comment on what someone else shares, we do so to express our views and to feel socially connected. We often act this way, whether intentionally or subconsciously, to create a more idealized self-image because we want to present ourselves in a good light. Or perhaps to inform or influence others, to get advice or look for sympathy. The registered self thus reflects how we want others to see us. Like the represented self, the registered self is not fixed, but can change according to what we experience, post, and the feedback we get. The inferred self is the one constructed by our virtual audience, based on our social media posts and how the audience reacts with them. Yet, as Wang explains, these posts are often scattered pieces of information that don't necessarily have a logical connection. For example, we might upload a few holiday photos, repost something by someone we follow or admire, and then post about a hobby, and so on. The audience has to find these scattered pieces and put them together to try to find out who we really are. This can lead them to not always perceiving us in the way that we see ourselves. We might consider ourselves to be outgoing or confident, but this might not be how they view us. Wang adds that by using multimedia tools, photos and videos, we're more likely to present ourselves in a way that's easier to interpret. So how does this affect teenagers during adolescence? Adolescence is a crucial period when young people explore who they are, what they value and believe in, and their place in the world. This has always been an important rite of passage, but it's become more complex in the digital age as social media plays a key role in how young people see themselves and are viewed by others. While it offers a wide range of opportunities for self-expression, experimentation and connection with like-minded individuals, it also increases the pressure to conform to the ideals and expectations that they encounter online. The 2022 article, Why Young Brains Are Especially Vulnerable to Social Media, on the American Psychological Association website, explains that around the age of 10, children's brains begin to undergo changes, which mean that social rewards feel more satisfying. So if someone gives them a compliment or appreciative feedback, they experience a rush of oxytocin and dopamine, the so-called happy hormones. This is, of course, nothing new, but as Mitch Prinstein, the APA's chief science officer, points out, Arriving at school in a new pair of designer jeans, hoping your crush will smile at you in the hallway, is worlds away from posting a video on TikTok that may get thousands of views and likes. Young people are still in the process of trying to find out who their represented self is, let alone how they want to present themselves to others on social media, where they'll be open to potentially harmful criticism and comparison from others. What's more, in some cases, teenagers also filter their registered self to present themselves in a more flattering light. While some filters are banned for those under the age of 18, such as beauty filters on TikTok, other sites still allow them. And of course, there are many editing and AI-based tools that enable them to touch up their photos before they post them. In January 2026, the New York Times published the current events conversation, What Teachers Are Saying About Altering Photos to Look Better Online. They'd asked teenagers for their responses to the following questions. Is it okay to alter photos of yourself to look better online? Does making minor tweaks, such as erasing acne, bulking muscles, smoothing stray hairs, cross any ethical lines? How far is too far when it comes to enhancing photos of yourself? The article contains wide-ranging and carefully considered responses, providing fascinating insights into the generation that's grown up with social media. Minor adjustments, such as color corrections or lighting, were generally considered to be acceptable, but many believed that enhancing features could quickly become dishonest. Some responders defended using filters, but said that photos should carry an appropriate disclaimer, while others argued that editing photos is just like wearing makeup or using flattering lighting. Other students questioned the honesty or authenticity of altered photos, or expressed concerns about the psychological toll of comparing a person's real self to a digital idea. Students also talked about growing up in a world where they constantly have to ask themselves whether something is real or not. For example, one girl, Lena, wrote, "As a teenager growing up in a time where it seems like everything online is photoshopped, edited or enhanced, I feel like you can't trust anything. Everything feels fake and stiff, like the AI sucked everything human out of the picture." What role do influencers play in all of this? One could say that influencers or people who endorse products have been around for centuries, but the word has taken on a different meaning since the advent of digital technology. And a highly profitable industry has sprung up, making it an attractive job option for many. The Cambridge Dictionary describes an influencer as being a person active on social media who's able to influence people's opinions or to persuade them to follow a particular lifestyle or buy a particular product. As we can see, influencers don't just promote products, some promote services, a particular lifestyle or ideas to their followers. The point is that their followers trust their opinions, pay attention to what they say, or look for recommendations or information. The Gymstudio 2025 found that many popular influencers for teens are active in the areas of beauty, gaming or comedy. But interestingly, it also found that 37% of participants also followed influencers for information regarding current events. Whereas only a quarter of those aged 12 to 15 did so, the number increased to 48% among 16 to 19-year-olds. So why are influencers so popular? The 2025 article Likes and Lies, The Effects of Influencers on Teens, published by Psychology Today, discusses how influencers shape teen identity. Author Robin Stern co-founded the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence and has spent years exploring the effects of social media. She explains that teens turn to influencers as they're looking for people to relate to or even hope to become. They're searching for role models. And while influencers can have a positive effect, such as promoting confidence or providing tips for self-expression, they can also do harm. When young people are constantly exposed to perfect photos and seemingly polished lives, this can lead to feelings of inadequacy, problems with self-esteem, unrealistic, or in some cases, even dangerous or toxic ideals. The problem is that influencers sometimes try to gaslight their followers. This means that they create a reality in which people feel as if they're never enough, or perhaps need a specific product to become who they want to be, or need to do something specific to be worthy. And this is especially damaging for young people who are still trying to work out who they really are. They see influencers living seemingly perfect lives, but are not always aware of the work and money this entails. Often what we see is a briefly curated snapshot, which is, of course, not the whole picture. As Stern writes, "Influencers know how to keep people watching. They use perfectly curated content that shows only what they want you to see, often the highlights of their lives. Influencers give a sudden sense of connection through constant postings, interactions with followers, or even vulnerable moments meant to make them seem relatable. And this is why they're successful, because they know how to keep their audience engaged. Against the backdrop of this seemingly perfect content, young people are simultaneously trying to piece together the information to form a picture of who the influencer is. But as we can see, this can lead to idealization and distortion as their conclusions are based on highly selected, sharply edited content. Parents are also responsible. In today's world, sharenting, using social media to share content about one's child, has become an increasingly big issue. While many parents post photos of their children out of a genuine desire to share progress or milestones with other family members, some of them are monetizing their children before they can even have a say in whether they want this or not. In the 2026 article, The Scandal of the Sharenting Economy for The New Yorker, Jessica Winter writes, "Family-centered content creation is an overstuffed toy chest of contradiction." She's referring to the fact that today, mundane or even uncomfortable moments of childhood are being uploaded to social media by parents to gain likes and monetize their children's childhoods. As she goes on to explain, the most successful and lucrative family vlogs are indiscreet, almost by definition. It's no coincidence that these parents are often referred to as mumfluencers and dadfluencers. But this presents a problem for young people. With every photo or post, we leave a trail behind us, a digital footprint that's difficult to erase. In this respect, the internet constantly confronts us with evidence of our past, which begs the question, are we taking away a child's chance to remake themselves at a later stage? Or even to decide to remain anonymous? And it's also extremely problematic in an age when employers often look at social media to see how prospective job candidates present themselves. While legislation has been passed in some US states to ensure that a percentage of profits from monetized content is placed in a trust until the child becomes an adult, this doesn't deal with two other important issues. Stacey Steinberg, law professor at Florida University, discusses these in an interview on the UNICEF website. Firstly, she talks about the tangible harm that children can experience when parents share content online. This can be identity theft, or making it easier for those who want to interact or harm children. She describes the second issue as follows. When we share things about our children online without involving them in that decision-making process, we're missing out on a valuable opportunity to teach our children and model for our children the idea of consent and to show them that we value privacy. How can we expect children to become responsible digital citizens that value their own and other people's privacy if we don't value theirs? And then there's the question of anonymity, which can be a double-edged sword on social media. On the one hand, it gives people an opportunity to discover who they really are without the fear of repercussions or stigma. This is especially important for young people when they're trying to find out who they are, as it allows them to explore gender identity, beliefs, and interests without social pressure. Additionally, it can protect users from online abuse or unwanted contact, whether they're children or maybe those who might be at risk of stalking or harassment. It also allows people to freely critique those in power without the fear of repercussions, or in some countries, fear for their personal safety. However, anonymity can lead to a lack of accountability. Some people then feel less inhibited about harassing or trolling others or giving vent to their feelings in a hateful or derogatory manner. This problem has partly been exacerbated by the design of some social media platforms, as they favour short, emotionally charged and/or controversial content so as to maximise user engagement and keep people's attention focused on their site. It's also become easier to spread false information, to act differently to the way one might act offline, or even to construct an identity that's completely false. A YouGov poll of over 5,000 Britons in 2025 asked people which statement they most agreed with. 41% agreed with the statement that everybody should have to disclose their real identity to a social network when signing up, but not have to display it on their profile. This was followed by 32% who said that everybody should have to display their real identity on their profile. Only 11% agreed that everybody should be able to use social networks without having to display or disclose their real identity. These findings not only highlight privacy concerns, but also deeper questions about who owns a person's identity and how much control individuals should have over it. For young people, this can be particularly challenging, as they're still developing their identity while simultaneously learning to take responsibility in the digital sphere, underscoring the need for digital and media literacy education. So what can we do in the classroom? Following Australia's lead, other countries, including Germany and the UK, are now considering banning social media for children under the age of 16. But it remains unclear whether this is really the most effective way to address its negative impacts. As we've seen, young people also use social media to inform themselves and connect with others. The challenge is, when combined with features such as endless scrolling, algorithms delivering personalized content, push notifications, and so on, it can potentially become very addictive. But adults also sometimes struggle to regulate their own screen time. This is why part of the solution lies in improving digital and media literacy from an early age. Importantly, though, these are not static skills that can simply be added to the curricula for years to come. On the contrary, they require continuous updating as new persuasive features and trends emerge on social media platforms. And as simple as this might sound, we need to begin by listening to students. Studies have shown that young people often feel overlooked, despite being directly affected, and they also want to share their perspectives and be taken seriously. We need to support students in the development of digital agency so that they reflect on what they encounter online. We need to help them to understand the tactics that are being used to keep them engaged and to question what they see rather than passively accepting it. To this end, we could get them to think about questions such as, who are you on social media? How do you choose what to post or share with others? To what extent do you present yourself through a filter, and why? How can you curate an online presence that feels authentic? Which influencers do you follow? To what extent are they sharing their genuine life? Does anything look staged or filtered? What's being shown and what's being left out? Are they just promoting a product or their own way of thinking? What are they really selling? Would I really say this if my name were attached to it? Would I really say this to the person if they were standing in front of me? And as you know, it's important to allow the students space to express themselves without judgment, or even anonymously, so that they feel more comfortable doing so. In today's digital world that's increasingly shaped by filters, algorithms, and supposed perfection, young people often feel under pressure to present idealized versions of themselves. Olivia, a student cited in the New York Times current events conversation, writes, "In an era of constant illusions and posts made by robots, it's important to reward what makes us human, our individuality. So perhaps the frizzy hair, acne and wrinkles don't deserve to be erased from pictures, but rather celebrated, because authenticity can be a refreshing reminder that, at the end of the day, we're human. And maybe in 2026, the world needs that." Thanks for listening.
Teaching English Today, The Four Seas and Beyond by Louise Carlton-Gertsch was brought to you by Ernst Klett Sprachen, der Verlag für modernes Fremdsprachenlernen in Schule, Ausbildung, Universität und Erwachsenenbildung. Sprachenlernen fürs Leben.